And by the way, talking about a unusual body, someone asked me the following question just now. I just got it before the show.
Okay.
Steve Shiver mentioned to Patrick that Adorno died on the toilet like Elvis.
Yeah. Did you see? I saw the email. Oh, that was a comment on the show or something, wasn't it? Yeah, I saw that. I was going to bring that up this morning. Yeah, is that true?
Etc. Then he said, although he made it sound like it was less than the perfume rose departure that we have heard of before. Well, here's the story behind that. On an all-night meditation, the next to the last day on Earth with Adorno, actually the last day because they've meditated all night. So at 6 or 7 in the morning, he turned around to everybody and said, don't lose control. And he went upstairs, and they saw him. That was peculiar. Well, then he didn't come down. And they finally went upstairs at noon because they realized something was wrong, and the bathroom door was locked. So they smashed it in, and there he was sitting in a meditational pose on the toilet, and he had dumped everything into the potty. So they took the body away, and at the morgue, he started smelling like roses all over his body. And the roses emanated from his forehead for the entire time he rested in for us to view, because we tried everything to revive him. We did reflexology, we did all kinds of things, but his body smelled of roses. And at one time, my friend Jonathan asked for a witness and brought a guy over and says, we need evidence that this, that he is smelling like roses right now. And the guy laughed. You picked the wrong guy. I can't even smell a barbecue. My nose function is totally dysfunctional. So the humor of the universe. But he stunk of roses, and we had the mortician. Who is the person who's legally responsible for dead bodies?
The coroner.
Coroner, that's it. He was so fascinated with the case that he actually, on his own time, came to the final funeral and all that and tracked down the body. And, of course, he predicted that, Adorno predicted that his eyes would turn blue, and that's not supposed to happen. I even asked the coroner if that's possible. He said he never heard of such a case. His brown eyes turned blue, and, of course, he stunk of roses. But by the time the coroner smelled the body, they had sent all these roses and kind of ruined the effect, so there were roses around. But I was one of the original people
who... He smelled it, right?
You know, I could smell it coming right out of his forehead. It was remarkable. Yeah. Well, and here we were sniffing the body. We looked like a weird cult. And, of course, it got out to the press that there was this some guy was going to resurrect, and they wanted to know. And so they kicked us out of the the coroner let us have special access to the body because he was so interested. But after that, they couldn't do it. And so the next thing was at the mortuary, and of course he didn't decompose in the 7 days he was there. Somebody opened the tomb up and said he had lost interest in his body, was the last words I heard. But it was very unusual. He did smell of roses, and that's the story of the great stool story.
Yeah, stool story. A little background on that for the audience. Roses, the spiritual masters, and the smell of roses has gone back since the beginning of time, right? So that's real. That's a real thing that happens, which gives a little even more credibility to Adorno Lay's being a true spiritual master, whatever that word true spiritual master. He had it going on some high state of consciousness, and it's very nice that you were able to spend a lot of time with him. You're very blessed to be able to do that. And also, a lot of folks will say, well, wait a minute now, if a guy's a spiritual master, how come he dies when he's 65 or 70, or how come he just doesn't live? And, you know, I get that often. Keep in mind that when somebody is a real true master, whether or not they're God-realized or not, that would be between them and God, that they're doing a lot of stuff on all kinds of levels that we don't know about, right? And it's hard on their body. It's difficult on their body, and they become very sensitive to things that we're not sensitive to. And then they also, you know, look what happens to spiritual masters like Jesus. I mean, you know, that killed him. What can I tell you? You know, it's not an easy life, you know, sometimes, you know. It's not like you sit in the cave and, you know, you smell like, you know what I'm saying, Adam? It's a hard life sometimes. I mean, it's hard on your body. It can be.
Also, they can become masters of time. You know, a friend of mine named Greg Whiteley went to Adano, and I had told him about something called time lag. So he asked Adano, what is this time lag he told me about? And so Adano simply put his hand up and waved it in front of him three times. And Greg said it looked like a strobe light, ding, 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 three times. And suddenly, everybody in the room around him stopped. There was no talking. They were paralyzed in place. And that lasted for about a full minute. And then Adano did the three strobe lights again. And he said, that's time lag. And so Greg was so fascinated, he went around the room and said, did you just notice something really unusual happen a few minutes ago? No. Did you notice something unusual? No. And so that's an example of living in the moment. True masters, and I've had the opportunity to be around several of them, will say that the moment is momentous and eternity is in the moment. It's not, you know, there is no time. We know that. So there is no space either. There's no time or space. There's only us.
That's it. And which lends to the whole idea that, and, you know, there was one point, let's see, in my teaching, Adam, with my teacher, that several of the spiritual works of Eckankar would talk about, that just doesn't make sense to take your mind off of God, you know. And at that point, 10 years ago or 20 years ago, I read that and said, well, come on, that doesn't make sense. You know, I got to live here, and, you know. But the more and more you look at it, and more you live, and more you realize what you just said is true. It's not just some hippie metaphysical idea that there's no time. There isn't. Zero. Nada. It doesn't exist. That why? What else are you going to do in that moment if you're not doing something like writing or singing or, I don't know, whatever, doing our work? Where would you put your mind, right? I mean, sure. What else you got to do? I mean, except talk to God or imagine or feel love or do something, but to put it anywhere else is just a waste of time. It's just that simple. You know, you can think about 2 days ago or think about a week ago, but it's just an illusion, you know? Does that make sense? I mean, there's just no, so I really understand what they were talking about keeping your mind on God, because that's where everything happens too, isn't it, in that moment? That's where we get the insights and the revelations and the aha moments and the creativity. That's where it all is.
Definitely. You know, a few days ago, I was reading the obituary section in the local paper, and I found a good friend of mine had gone on cosmic vacation. She made it till 98. Her name was Margaret Singer, and there's videos out on her on YouTube. She was an escapee from Nazi Germany and everything, and became quite a celebrity here in Santa Barbara. She's the one, by the way, that turned me on to, she came to see me at the health food store, and she said, what kind of way do you eat? And I said, I eat by the patterns of how the sun grows. She said, oh, you mean you eat from the trees in the morning, from the bushes in the middle of the day, and the roots at night? I said, do you know Adano Lay? No. I said, where did you get that information? From a book? I said, what book? Nature of the Healer by John and Vera Richter. So that's when I first found out that Adano didn't invent cellular nutrition. And actually, it's been around for
a long
possibly
time.
10,000 years,
sure,
even.
Sure.
But she lent me the book, and I still have the copy of her book. But anyway, Margaret was so inspiring, quite a lady, and seeing her on video, the joy when she puts her eyes up can almost make me cry now to see how joyful her life was. And up till she just went on cosmic vacation in May, and she was even marching in Martin Luther King Day parade here in Santa Barbara before she left.
Isn't that cool?
She was quite an active lady.
So is that book still around, Nature?
Yeah, Nature of the Healer, it's still around. The Richters ran basically what could be called a solar nutrition cafeteria, two of them in L.A. and one up in the Hollywood Hills. I knew Gypsy Boots personally, and I never asked him about that aspect because I didn't have a clue that he worked with the Richters and that his buddy His best buddy was, what was it, the guy who wrote Nature Boy? His name's escaping me. Remember that song, Nature Boy?
Sure,
that,
I know the song, yeah, but I don't
Nature
know.
Nature Boy. No. But anyway, the Richters were way ahead of their times. They got a few things different, like pineapple was a midday and everything. But otherwise, your roots were at night, your tree foods in the middle at morning, and your vines and your grains and everything at midday. And they actually had three cafeterias that were run that way. And by the way, Michael Douglas and Kirk Douglas ate at those restaurants, so I'd sure like to talk to them about it. They knew Gypsy personally, and Eden, I'm getting close to his name, the author of, he played piano, the other guy, at these cafeterias.
Yeah, yeah.
Before he became famous and bought a ranch and retired on that one song.
The only part of that that doesn't feel like it would come naturally, just kind of thinking about it, would be meat or chicken, where I think people wouldn't, out in the woods, don't you think they tend to have a hard day out hunting and then they'd make a fire and they would tend to eat that more at night than midday? I wonder how that turns out to be more of a midday thing. Does that
good
make
question,
sense? In other words,
but a lot of eating was done in the middle of the day.
Oh, it was.
Human beings, now there's all kinds of stories, and remember, there's all so many different climates that there is no such thing as a paleo diet. It is so different for different periods. In India, they were all vegetarians. They were all meat eaters up north. It's as different as a bear. Is a bear a meat eater? A panda is a completely vegetarian, and a grizzly, a polar bear is a complete carnivore.
Yeah.
So we have all those options within us, and so... The long-lived diets that I've looked into them, they tend to eat their fish at night and their chicken and things in the middle of the day and eat from the trees whenever you'll find a long-lived diet. And whether you find them in places like the National Enquirer or you find them in scientific books, I found that's pretty much a general rule.
Yeah. But the morning stuff makes sense, kind of fruit and nuts. I mean, that seemed like that would just kind of be normal, right? You get up and you wouldn't want to have a hamburger, right, in the middle, in the first thing in the morning.
Well, you know, it's not like everybody just automatically figured out to eat that way, but
sure.
People were a lot smarter than we give them credit for. We have to blame space aliens for coming in and teaching them all this stuff. But I find circadian medicine was supposed to start in earnest in about the 1950s. Now I've gone back to the Civil War in 1862 and found some of the most sophisticated circadian information ever done. Because then they looked at the body specifically, they looked at the stomach, they looked at digestion times. Dr. Beaumont, who looked in a musket hole in one of his patients for about 20 years, knew more about stomach digestion than anybody does today, and they tend to forget that research too. One of the things I disagree with Ray Pete, and I could have misunderstood that, but I understand that he said you can't digest raw carrot. Well, Dr. Beaumont clearly showed that you can. You put it in your stomach, and as long as you chew it, it's going to digest. So all of the digestion times in the stomach were done for beef and everything. By the way, it turns out that fish and venison, your natural meats, would digest in 1 hour, while whatever they were raising beef on even back then was taking 4 or 5 hours to digest.
Because of what they were feeding them.
I would imagine that was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dr. Beaumont didn't go further into why that was, but he just he tested what the stomach acid was doing in the stomach, and then he found out how long it would take outside of the stomach. He did exact tests. He found out that the temperature of digestion makes a big deal. 101 is ideal. And if you take a nap right after you eat, it is not good. You should go for a gentle walk. You get that wiggle muscle going where it jiggles up the stomach so that the stomach acid gets more balanced.
Yeah.
And you touch it to the various areas. When people sit down after they eat and don't take a post-prandial walk, they used to call it, They have digestion problem. And he also found out that on humid days, you have a lower stomach temperature, so you get poor digestion. He worked out humidity, barometric pressure, all kinds of things back in 1830 or so.
Isn't that great?
Amazing.
Yeah, the Taoists have a thing saying, it's a great old, you know how they get poetic, Adam, sometimes, that if you rub your stomach in a clockwise and then walk 45 paces. After meals, you'll never have a stomach problem. That's what
you know, that's a beneficial rule.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I've been doing it forever. Yeah.
One of the worst things that people misinterpret, they figure, well, if you have constipation, you work it in a clockwise direction. If you have diarrhea, you work it in a counterclockwise direction. Well, that's like putting a plug in your butt. The correct way to do that is still go in a clockwise direction on one side of the colon, which is called the water colon versus the motor colon, and then the water gets absorbed and you don't have the diarrhea, or the true cause of the diarrhea was too much water in the water colon.
So the water colon is the ascending?
That's the ascending colon. You'll find that's really liquidy.
That's where you'd want to do the clockwise, and then you want to do counterclockwise on the descending?
No, counter, no.
No, never do
the counterclockwise is like putting a plug in. What you want to do is, for constipation, you do clockwise for the entire colon, and for diarrhea, you go clockwise, only go up, in other words, on the on the right side.
Yeah.
You know, just go up. And that automatically allows the water to be absorbed, and all the minerals, of course, in the colon go back in too.
Well, another thing I did too, I did a lot of fun things that I don't even remember. When I actually did, I did my coffee enema after I drank the olive oil Friday night, I shined a red light on my liver gallbladder too.
Excellent.
That was kind of fun.
Red light makes a big difference, yeah. It's been known to be, I believe somebody who researched it got the Nobel Prize for that back in 1903.
What, shining?
Been a while since I wrote my book on red light, so I forget the guy's name.
Shining a red light after a coffee enema, they got a Nobel Prize?
Well, for other research. He did research on how important light was. You know, back in the glory days of light therapy, back in the day, General Electric was involved, and the Swiss were involved, and all that. They found out that it could cure tuberculosis and a variety of diseases, and they had specific ways of doing it. You didn't get exposed to the sun. In fact, you can get a reaction. If I decide I'm going to be healthy and just go out in the sun, I could cause more problems. What they did is they had a person be exposed. Their feet were exposed for 1 week, then they're exposed up to the knees the second week, then up to the waist the third week, then up to the chest the fourth week, and finally the entire body the fifth or sixth week. And they had tremendous results doing that. And people have forgotten those protocols, which were worked out exactly. The books exist. I found them in medical libraries, and some of them are still available if you search on the internet. A lot of them aren't, but a lot of them are.
This is from LG. Pastor, how would it be possible that this black cumin seed oil that you're talking about could be good for an ulcer, and the black cumin seed oil is really hot? I don't understand that. Yeah, I don't either. But the black cumin seed is supposed to be for the H. pylori infection, but you would think it would aggravate an ulcer if I had one of those, wouldn't it? A hot...
Well,
but maybe the honey, you mix it with honey, yeah.
You would think that cayenne would do that too, and yet cayenne has been well known to heal ulcers.
Oh, cayenne is good for ulcers too?
Yeah, the hotter the better.
I wonder why.
You know, once upon a time, I took cayenne. Donald Lay told me, you can eat any amount of cayenne you want, it doesn't hurt. So I took a heaping teaspoon of it, and boy did I get a bellyache. So I go back to Donald and I complain. I said, I got a bellyache. He said, you have a black small intestine, double the dose. Anybody else, I would have, I'd tell they were crazy. I went and doubled the dose and I had no problem. But I still think people should be careful. You can overdo anything. There have been studies that if you give cayenne to a child too much of it, it can stunt their growth. It can do all kinds of things. So again, moderation in all things.
Moderation. Somebody sent me a link to this, Nature the Healer, John and Henry, John Richter and Henry Splinter,
That's a newer version, apparently, because it was John and Vera Richter originally, that's but they probably want. Have an updated copy, probably from McComely Hill, the publishers there in McComely Hill, California.
Plus, they want
Health Research.
Plus, they want $37 for this paperback. I don't think so. That's. I think we could do better than that, but thanks for sending that anyway.
I believe you can. You can probably find a used copy of it. It's been around a long time. Margaret Singer brought me a hardback from, I think it was first published in the early 30s. Then it was reissued in the 50s. Then it was reissued by the McComely, the health research people as a spiral bound. And there's probably more editions since then. But you can find a better deal on that, I'm sure.
Yeah, plus you just... Richter, you don't know the Splinter guy. How'd he get in there?
That's a good question. I haven't seen that edition.
Just an extra edition, and we'll charge you extra money. Okay.
Yeah, the Richters were really amazing people. You know, they were a little bit too much on... if you go total vegetarian, you can get in trouble, because they had a lot of wrinkles on their bodies.
Did
and
they?
Things like yeah. that has been yeah. reported. They lived pretty healthily, especially Mrs. Richter would... go climb trees and things like that up into her 80s or 90s, I believe. And she had a cookbook she wrote at one point, too. That's available through Health Research, too, it used to be.
Well, I think a lot of the veggies mean well, but and if they really go short on the fats, they'll tend to dry up a little bit and, you know, look older than what they really are. It happens.
Exception to the rule is, again, Margaret Singer. She, when she was in Nazi Germany, she saw a chicken killed, and it traumatized her. So she refused to eat meat, and her mother was distraught, trying to force food. She wouldn't eat it. She never ate meat again. Up and she lived to 98, and she refused all kinds of meat and fish and everything, and did great. When I knew her, she took Adano's workshops, and at one point she said, I can't eat bananas. I'm allergic to them. And Adano said, scrape them, and you won't. So since it was one of her favorite foods, she was delighted. She scraped it. And in her video, 2 years before she died, she said, if I had a last meal, it would be almonds and bananas. She grew them on her own property.
Uh-huh. Here's an email for you. Does Adam know any benefits about borax for us to take?
I get my boron from natural foods. When you find something, what do you call it, mucilaginous.
Mucilaginous,
yeah. Yeah, like almost slimy. A banana, okra.
Okra is
a really good source of it. Anything like that is high in boron. So one thing I do not, I'm not a big fan of Wikipedia. They lie about a lot of things, but they're really good for putting ingredients of certain things in it and what's in something. So you can take any vegetable and look at the boron level and things like that and find out which are high in boron. And I see no need to go take boron. I think it's important. It's a bone builder. It works for sexual function. It does a lot of things. So boron is an extremely valuable mineral, but it can get out of, you can get it out of food without having to take have to go to the hardware store and get borax.
Yeah, Richard Ulrich, you know, the fellow that did the Walter's book Minerals for the Genetic Code, he's a big fan of boron. He said that we need a little bit, and he actually makes a little product. They have a little boron in it, so he's pretty much a boron monster. But we get it in food, though, right?
It's valuable if you know how to get it. You know, when people don't know, then they supplement. But everything, the timing makes a big difference too. In other words, you're using a sniper rifle approach to get the nutrient versus the hand grenade version, because when you target the exact timing, you can need a lot less of something. And sometimes you can activate it. Like back in the day, they would take arsenic. Why? Because it would replace the iron in the body, and you'd get rid of anemia. They called it chlorosis back then. And all you needed was a little sun and a little arsenic, and you were right back in the game without any iron whatsoever.
We're going to take the next phone call and get some more emails before we go with Adam Bergstrom. Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition is his hardcover book, but you can check out his website. We have all the links on his show page, Sunsink Nutrition. That's the one where you pay $99 till the end of time, or you die, whichever comes first. And then solartiming.com, that's where you get all the ebooks. And then Adam does a blog on our website. Very honored to have him do that. Really cool stuff. And he's here on the first and the third Monday. Today would be the first. We got a little sale going on with Wayne Blakely. He's got a few items that are kind of overstocked. And you'll see them in the store. I think it's the Perfect Molecule, the C60, Floor PM. What's the other one? I'll find it here. But also on the front page, you'll see one of the most ordered products, which is the Multi Blend. There's about 6-8 different probiotics in there. They all kind of live together. They're happy. And he has a 2-for-1, or two buy two, get one free. So this is a nice value for sure. So you buy in two and you get one free. You can click on in the store or right on the front page and you'll see it. And let's see what the size they are. Oh, they're the 8-ounce bottles. So you're going to be loaded up. That's a great deal. Two bottles, Living Streams Multi-Blend Probiotic, 8 ounces, one free. So you get two, order two, you're going to get one free. And just click on the front page, you'll see it there. Or go in our store, find the Multi-Blend. That's the one we recommend you start with anyway. And then if you wanted to add another one, I would do the minerals. You know, Dr. Steve Shiver is very big on minerals. And they've proven that the Living Minerals and the Living Streams has about, I think, 87 minerals that are available. And that's almost as many as out there in the ocean. That's a lot of them. And so, you know, if you're going to get something extra when you order the Multi-Blend on sale, 2-for-1, or buy two, get one free, maybe get yourself a bottle of the minerals, and then you'll be all buttoned up. And take those for a couple months and see how you do. I think your body will like it. Most people do. We've had very few. I don't think we have any people say, man, I don't like these things. These probiotics are so important. I mean, you go on Dr. Google, and you go to any protocol, I don't know what you're trying to get rid of, and they'll always add probiotics. So why not go with some probiotics that we know the source? Wayne's been making these puppies for about 20 years, and these are living. They're not going to get all croaked up in the stomach. And these are for humans. They're made for humans. And there's about 3 or 4 or 5, I don't know, 6 different ones in the Multi-Blend. You can get 2 bottles of Living Streams Multi-Blend Liquid Probiotic, 8-ounce bottles, and get one free. It's a good deal in our store right now, OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with Stephanie Seneff, PhD, research scientist with MIT on her work with glyphosates, GMO, and sulfur.
I know you really care about sulfur, and so do I. You know, I really think sulfur is crucial for health and that we have a massive problem with sulfur deficiency in this country. One of the proteins that I found that is disrupted by glyphosate, because it has an essential glycine, is sulfotransferase. That's a protein that moves sulfate from one molecule to another, but it's really, really important to be able to do that.
And why wouldn't it be able to do it? Because the glyphosate disrupts the natural sulfur cycle in our body?
The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. And of course, glyphosate chelates sulfur.
A perfect storm in the challenges department, perhaps, but we're getting creative. So we know that we've been low on sulfur for years because of the chemical fertilizers, and now the GMO thing, which is disrupting the sulfur cycle. And we know with sufficient amounts of sulfur in the body, it's the natural way that the body gets these heavy metals, for example, mercury and mercury sulfate, out of the body if we have enough sulfur. Click and order sulfur today on OneRadioNetwork.com. And if you want more than 4 pounds, email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Sulfur gets a whole cysteine thing happening, and then that works on the liver and the glutathione, and then you know that process there where we get to ditch a lot of stuff that your body doesn't need. Sulfur has also been known to be anti-parasitic. It's also, and we don't need a lot of, I don't know about you, but I don't need a lot of sulfur-bearing vegetables. I just don't really like them much. Probably why that's probably why I take the sulfur. It helps cells become more flexible, the arteries and the veins, and that's what you want everybody slippery and slidey. It's needed for insulin production. I think it's the third most abundant mineral in the body, in the muscles, skin, bones, and it's been called a beauty mineral. It's been one of the big ones that David Wolf talked about many years ago in his book, Eating for Beauty. And he called it MSM back there, which is sulfur. And it's for hair, skin, and nails. Guarantee you'll see a difference in how fast your nails grow just by taking what I do. I do about, I do two teaspoons twice a day. I just love it. It's a great product. My hair, skin, everything looks good on me. And I've been around the sun a few times. Couple. There you go. SulphurOneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Let's go to the telephone here with Adam Bergstrom on June 3rd. Good morning on the phone. Whose might this be?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Hi, Patrick. Hi, Adam.
Hi, who's this? Hi, who's this?
My name's Elise.
Elise?
Elise, yep.
That's a nice name. Where do you live, sweetie?
I'm in California.
Oh, out in California.
Southern California.
Yeah. You know, it never rains in Southern California. You know that song?
Not anymore.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Adam, I wanted to ask you about this guy. His name is Wim Hof. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He set a bunch of Guinness World Records. He's known to like withstand extreme temperatures. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, we've had him on the show. Now, why don't you?
Really?
Yeah, go in our search engine, and then you can listen to the show. Yeah, he's really cool. Adam, you're a fan, right? You know Wim?
Oh yeah, yeah, a remarkable guy.
Yeah. Well, his breathing technique is incredible. I've just started to do it, and it's the idea behind it of being able to kind of supercharge your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to ask Adam's opinion on it, but it sounds like it's a good idea. Is it okay to do?
Yes, no, maybe. If you're looking for fitness, it's ideal. If you're looking for longevity, then there's problems. The slower you do the breath, like Buteyko breathing, which actually is the American Indians were doing Buteyko breathing years ago, and the artist George Catlin wrote a book about it on how you want to get more carbon dioxide in your body. But his particular technique works in the same way that there were a couple of different techniques in the movie The Big Blue, if you saw that, the dolphin breathing technique, and then the regular hold your breath technique. So for fitness, he is a remarkable man. He's hung by what, single fingers from helicopters up in the air. He's ran across the Sahara Desert, climbed Everest in his shorts, and brought 70-year-olds up the hill with him, which is supposed to be impossible. So he's a remarkable guy. I give him credit.
But you think? But I mean, she's not going to shorten her life just by doing this practice every now and then.
If you do it all the time, in a while, yeah. No problem. Now, here's the thing. You get the best of both worlds. You do Wim Hof when you want to be exposed to cold and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do the Buteyko breathing at night. Daytime is when you're the most highly oxygenated. So his technique would be excellent for that. At nighttime, you can see the way they did it in Tibet. If you look at the old National Geographic magazines, they would be amazed. Their Sherpas in a loincloth would go out and go to sleep in the snow at 10 below zero and not have any problem. Didn't have to do any special breathing or anything like that, because there are other techniques than his method. His brother doesn't do his method, and he has the same ability to withstand cold. I don't know if he runs across the Sahara Desert and everything like that. But anyway, he's an unusual guy. I've watched a lot of interviews. I've listened to the ones on Patrick's show and seen many videos of him. And he's an extraordinary person, and the things he does are amazing.
Yeah, and you can learn more, Elise, you can learn more about Buteyko, and you can do them both and kind of balance it out if you want to.
That sounds good. Now, one thing, though, that really made an impression on me, I was watching his one of his interviews, and he brought up the subject of depression and how in our modern society we... So his theory on depression, are you familiar with that at all? And how his breathing technique kind of floods the body with, what is it, like the norepinephrine? And that's what's kind of lacking in our modern environment. We don't have exposure to things like cold, you know, the elements like cold or extreme heat. And we actually are designed to have exposure to those things, and that could be the cause of depression. We don't have that.
Exposure to the environment is important. We are separated from the environment. It leads to teeth problems, separation from nature, and we don't get enough light, natural light. People had sense enough to stay in the shade, but that's outside light, and due to refraction, where the light would ricochet, you could get vitamin D being in the shade. And of course, there's much more than vitamin D. When you buy a vitamin D pill, you're basically buying a battery. They charge it with light and it wears down. So if you're buying a stale vitamin pill, you'll be lucky if you get any vitamin D, even if it says 50,000 international units. Vitamin D is meant to get instantaneously on your skin, or as you eat the food will take in all the vitamin D you need. And you can put your food out in the direct sun and stay in the shade and get all the vitamin D you want. But you get it at all frequencies. They do it in one frequency because it's cheaper and better and more financially efficient for them. But we need the outdoors. We need the exposure to cold. At one time, I had the ability to do that somewhat. I would walk around during the winter without a shirt and in shorts. And one time in Flagstaff, just to blow people's minds, I would lie on a bench in the snow in my Speedo bathing suit and be pretending I'm sleeping on the bench, and they would come kind of walk by and look the other way like, uh-oh, who's this nut? Yeah, I went by, Carol Crosby is a witness. She can tell you the time I went through my tank top stage, where even when it was 30 above zero in Houston, Texas, I went out to have an orange juice with no shirt on in my shorts, and a lady, the wind is blowing ferociously, it's ice cold, she's in an overcoat, she runs to the phone booth and yells at me, and I suppose you think it's summer or something. And I just tilted my orange juice to her. It was spleen pancreas time, and drank it and went on my way.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, so back to my point, though, about this, you know, depression and how, like, it's in our kind of our blueprint to, you always hear about like running away from saber-toothed tigers and how that's sort of the natural way to do it. But so Wim Hof is saying, like, his breathing technique, like, you don't have to be really cold. It's the act of breathing that way that can simulate that sort of.
All you need to do is get outside. If people got outside in the sun, depression wouldn't be there. You don't have depression in so-called primitive people living out in the self. There's no such thing. It's a civilized disaster, disease rather, that only happens when you're inside and don't go out. It's really hard to be depressed if you live correctly. It's only our society that gives people lousy jobs, forces them to go to school and sit in rows, and then when the child moves inappropriately, they call it ADHD, and that's where you're going to get your depression, because you can't do what you want.
Alisa, can you get out in the sun? Do you get out there?
Yeah, well, sunny sunny California. So yeah, I know I haven't been out in the sun much, and it's Fair point. So
really good. Yeah, really
I'm
good for
that.
It.
I have the ability to do that here. So yeah,
we are lucky that way. And by the way, changing the set point on your breathing, whether it's very slow or very fast, can work on depression indeed. So Wim Hof is correct about that changing your breath control can give you control over depression. First of all, motivation is what most people don't have, and you have to be motivated to run across the Sahara Desert and do all the wonderful things he's doing and demonstrating on a pretty much daily basis. You know, he's a wonderful madman.
Elise, have you ever experienced or investigated yoga, some yogic things?
Never really had an interest in that, but...
Well, that'll help you. That could help you really slow your breathing down and to get more carbon dioxide and stretch. And they do things like the lion pose where you stick your tongue out and look up, and that resets your parasympathetic, you know, your fight or flight or fight thing you're talking about. Lots of good things
can
be helped.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting more into the body.
That's
part of it, and that's probably what held me back.
Yeah, well, you might look at just either simple hatha yoga classes could really be very beneficial for you.
What's it called? Hatha yoga?
H-A-T-H-A. Yeah, they got them all over the place. You could start there, find a good teacher you like, and have some fun.
The other thing is to find out what you really love. Some people love horseback riding. Some people like hiking in the woods. Some people bicycle riding. When you find what you really love to do, so many people don't. They claim they love their jobs, and basically they tolerate their jobs. If you wake up in the morning and jump out of bed, not get out of bed slowly, jump out of bed and said, "I can't wait to get to work, man," and start the day. I've only had jobs like that when I haven't worked for myself a couple of times. One at a TV station when it was like paradise to me, and another one as a cab driver in Hollywood. I had a ball there. I couldn't wait to get and meet the weirdos I was going to meet during the day.
Elise, let me ask you, if you could wave a magic wand, right? Just right there. Wave your magic wand right now. And what kind of job or where would you be and what kind of life would you have? What would you do? What would you be?
I love to analyze people. That's kind of one of my passions in life, I guess.
Analyze others?
I don't know. Yeah, just kind of understand where other people are coming from. So it'd be more of a compassion-based job.
Potential body dowser.
Yeah, you could learn body dowsing from Adam. That'd be fun.
Yeah, then you could find out who's the matter with me. Because when people are depressed, it's always a he or she. It's never an it. Once in a while, it's an it. But I've very seldom found a person that I tripped on the front porch 50 years ago, and I'm going to get even with that front porch if it's the last thing I do. But I've seen people say that about their ex-wife or their mother or their father and things like that, or their boss.
I'm going through a journey of self-awareness. Like that's crucial. That's kind of where it all starts. So I feel blessed. I'm fortunate that I've found tools, and I think just things come to me, you know, like blog posts or whatever, and kind of point me in the right direction. Okay. Like one thing, self-compassion. I find that I give all my compassion away. I've been giving my compassion away to other people, and there really hasn't been any left for me. But lately, I've been aware of that, which is like the first step. I find that things are there's a lot of good things happening.
Good
so
for you. Well, you sound good.
I'm very grateful.
Keep at it.
In my life.
And I think you're onto something. I mean, for for us to question ourselves, you know, like, it's like the number one thing you don't want to do. Just love yourself no matter what, how bonkers you get. Just love yourself. Because God does, right? So why would you not?
Yeah. That's the first thing you do. You know, that's why they tell you in a plane, first put the breathing mask on yourself before you save anyone else. And it's the same thing with health. Yeah. You have to save yourself and take care of yourself and then take care of other people. Otherwise, and I've been there before, you become the wounded healer. Not a good idea.
So true. Oh, so true.
All right, sweetie. Well, thanks for calling. Well, we enjoyed having you on the show.
Thank you. Okay. So much. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Damn. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. Elise. And Elise, we talk a lot about these kinds of things. Spiritual Matters on Open Phone Friday, every Friday at 9 o'clock. So why don't you join us and join the conversation. Somebody just sent another one. This is another version. I think this is the one you're talking about. Nature the Healer, hardcover, John and Vera Richter. But boy, they're still very expensive. Wow. Hardcover, $60, paperback, $54. I guess they're in limited supply, so they get. Boy, that's a lot of money for these books. But
used to be a lot cheaper. In fact, though, I took Margaret Singer's original copy, took it right to the print shop, and printed the whole copy. It's how I have my copy. But after that, I found the health research one and bought it at very cheap prices. But since I prefer my copy that I made, I gave those away as gifts to somebody back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back and do a phone call, another call. Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Oops, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hey, Patrick. This is Nancy in Nebraska. Good morning to you and Adam.
Hi there, sweetheart. What's going on?
I just got to share this with y'all.
Y'all?
About 3 weeks ago, you know, because in the very beginning, years ago, I called in about AFib.
AFib?
My heart.
Heart goes pitter-pat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pitter-pat. And I've been in the emergency room about three different times, okay? So this last time I was in there, they were talking about doing electrical shock to my heart. And I was like, ooh, I don't know about that. Well, luckily I come out of it and I was okay and went home. Well, 3 weeks ago we were out feeding cows, and so I was going to help open this gate, which it had a hot wire on it. And it was a different gate. I've never opened that one. So I, you know, did the hot wire thing and moved it over. And so luckily I had gloves on. But when I went to open that wire gate, my top of my hand hit that top wire and
you got a little shock.
I got shocked. But ever since then, my heart has been beating like boom, 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 like normal.
I love that story.
I do a little tapping and it goes a little fast, but it's not that irregular heartbeat. So, Adam, what's the deal there?
Environmental massage is what Adonale used to call that. I've heard of people that have healed themselves of a problem by falling on the stoop and suddenly some problem goes away or whatever, and you did your own electrical therapy without having to pay the doctors to do it. Congratulations.
So ever since then, it's been real steady.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'll feel it, you know, my wrist, and it's like boom, 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 boom. Boom. You know, it's not boom, 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 boom.
Boom, 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 boom. It's supposed to go boom, boom, boom. That's pretty
anyway,
fun.
Anyway, so I think I told my husband, I said, well, next time if I ever go into AFib, I'll just go out there and hit that hot wire.
Of course, a lot of those arrhythmias are usually not serious, but they want to scare you with them. They usually take care of themselves. And one way to stop it that I've done before is you go to the name of the heart point isn't coming to me, but it's right at the wrist.
Yeah.
The heart meridian goes from the pinky on down, and you go where the wrinkle lines are at the wrist. You know, there's three. They call it the bracelet or something like that. And go right in the corner of the wrist there and hit the left first and the right after that. And you can experiment because it's usually going to come from the left or right side. So you can try one side first and the other side. Once you figure out what side it's coming from, you can just stick to that one side. That will usually straighten it out in most people. And if not, they scare people with it. It's supposed to be bad. AFib is one type of irregularity. There's a lot of types. There's serious types, non-serious types, and everything. And most people, probably 90% of them, it won't bother them at all. To further take care of it, you want to have a healthy gallbladder, a healthy kidneys, and a healthy large intestines. Those are all shunts to the heart and protectors of the heart.
So that area there, what he's talking about, Nancy, is like I used to do like three fingers right there, you know, at that line, and just kind of tap that and tap it slow, like 60 beats a minute or whatever, and that helps settle down often.
So if I'm looking at the palm of my hand and just kind of bend up, there's like three lines there at
right.
the wrist.
Yep.
That's
right
the one.
Tap.
And then you tap right above the lines, right, Adam?
Yep. You go actually to the side of the wrist and just press in there. I think it's heart five,
inside
but I've forgotten
outside?
What the number is.
The inside. Inside or outside?
Oh, on the where the little pinky is. So
on
you're
the inside.
On the
inside.
On the inside.
Yeah, on the other side, feeling your pulse, right? On the outside, that's where your pulse is.
Yep.
So go on the other side and just tap that very, very slowly.
Yep.
Well,
you got the pinky, you have both the heart meridian and the small intestine meridian. The heart meridian is right on the side where you can get it. The heart is on the inside, and the large small intestine is on the outside. The yang meridians go to the back of the body, the hollow ones, the yang ones, and the solid ones go to the front of the body. That's one of the things Chinese medicine got quite correctly.
I think what you can do also, Nance, is go out and get one of those little moo cows and just hug it, you know? Just hang out there. I mean, they'll chill out that way, too, won't you?
And I told you the other day, I have a baby bull calf.
Oh.
I mean, he is. He's out here running in the yard. We, you know, feed him the bottle. He's on the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But he's our pet, little Rocky Balboa. I was going to send you a picture. I'll do that. I'll email you a picture.
Hang around with him, boy. He'll chill you out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am more chilled out, but it's just, it was the caffeine and super-duper sugar stuff that would just another planet.
Got to be careful. All right, so
I am doing the cobalamin tonic that Adam said, because I had mentioned that would probably set me off, and he said, no, just, you know, go slow and then increase, and so I do. I get my little caffeine high buzz, but I'm not pounding crazy. Yeah.
It doesn't rip you up. Yeah, there's something about the chocolate and the maple syrup, Adam, that it just
they work really well together. Yeah,
really nice.
Cobalamin tonic, they activate B12. You won't find much B12 in, although some authorities say it is in the cocoa, but it's more like an activator. You know, the quality of a vitamin versus the quantity are two different things. You can put all the vitamin or a mineral in your body, and if they don't do anything, if there's no point of delivery and transport delivery, then there's no result. Certain things deliver things without having to get the drug delivery forms like they do. Liposomal vitamin C is a delivery system, a nano delivery system that goes with the vitamin C to make it absorb more. But I don't like the idea of my body has a resistance. It knows the amount of vitamin C it needs. So I don't like delivery systems saying, we're going to force some extra in you. And nowadays, they have nanotechnology. Our foods are being nano-invaded. It's a $5 or $6 billion industry already. They haven't told people that we're eating nano foods. They're putting fish oil in your beets and things like that, unbeknownst to the people. And anything they want, coenzyme 10, whatever they think is good for you, they're putting in our fresh foods as well as our box foods now. And I don't think it's ethical, and it's perfectly legal. The FDA will not stop these people, and they pay for a lot of the research.
Okay, Nance, thanks for calling. Yeah, and boy, that's a real strong argument for going to the farmer's market, where you know the guys aren't shooting up your beet with a something, you know. Whew.
It is. In my last show, Adam 2.0, I talked about how they 3D print at an atomic level the food now.
Yeah.
And somebody, and rightly so, said, impossible proof. And I said on this show, just strap in your seatbelt and get your Gorilla tape out, because they do this. How to find out, though? You're not going to find out from the people selling the food. Go to your nanotechnology industrial handbooks and then put food in, or put additives in, and you'll find out how they do this. One of the easiest to manipulate is starch molecules. So now I can take, if I'm a manufacturer, I can take corn and I can build it into potato starch or wheat starch or anything I want to, and it will act exactly like it, for all intents and purposes do it, but I can call it corn starch, and the FDA will not stop people from doing that. They're claiming, if you look at further internet YouTubes, that they're doing it with DNA. Well, DNA has trans DNA, and the breakdown products of it, where it doesn't work. So they're lying. They're doing it by manipulating the particle size and getting an entire world. It's like taking the 120 elements and making them into a million elements. They basically have the control of life on this planet now, and they're doing it behind our back.
Behind closed doors. Adam and Patrick, it is June 3rd, 2019. We've had Adam's friend Steve Shiver on the show a couple times. He's a trip. And so I found a Dakota wedge. So I'm going to lengthen my neck. And my chiropractor, he ordered one for me. So we're going to get it this week. So I'm going to do that. Do you see, ever see that contraption he likes, that Dakota wedge?
I haven't seen it, but I know, even before I learned that Steve was really into the neck like that, I studied with that yogi that lives there in Robert. Gosh, I'm skipping on his name now. I told you about him last week. What, Bustani? That's right.
Right.
And he does an exercise that's down out of Qigong, which is apparently a common exercise. You simply sit in a meditation position, and you start raising into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be surprised, in a half hour your neck has lengthened so much, you keep going up and up, where you can almost feel like you're becoming one of those natives where they stretch the necks up to,
yeah,
like the length,
yeah,
of a giraffe. So apparently those techniques are very beneficial. The Qigong people know about it. I'm sure the yogis have their, mm-hmm, own version of it. And so Steve is really onto something with the C3.
Yeah, boy. It makes sense. If you get everything lengthened there and soft and supple, and you don't have any of the, you know, the nerves that are going through the brainstem and the mouth of God getting impinged or something, which could cause all kinds of problems that you have no idea. So he's a big C3 guy for sure. But, you know, there's ways to do it without the contraptions. You know, sometimes it's fun to have the contraptions. You can just do it. A couple more here. I've recently discovered my whole diet has always been full of oxalates. Maybe contributing to my rheumatoid arthritis. If oxalates, phytates, and lectins bind up the minerals in all these foods, then strict vegetarians will always be mineral deficient. Can you comment on oxalates? From Patricia. Oxalates.
They can be very beneficial for your teeth. The secret of avoiding tooth decay are oxalates. And they knew this in the 40s, but now we've forgotten it. Now they have to divide it into separate foods. Oh, take rhubarb, it's good for your teeth. Oxalates. Take cocoa, it's good for your teeth. Oxalates. Take coffee, it's good for your teeth. Oxalates. Oxalates are all around, and we should keep them to a minimum. They're good for our health in a lot of ways. Lectins, too. There's about 5 or 6 lectins, jackfruit lectin, wheat germ lectin, etc., that are anti-cancer. Most of them are bad guys. And again, it's a quantity. So when I make my lentils, I make sure they're sprouted. Actually, Vibrant Health sprouts them for me. And that gets rid of most of the lectins. So I prefer a low lectin diet. and a low oxalate diet and some of the other chemicals that are there.
And is that a part and parcel of the rheumatoid arthritis that she is suggesting?
No. There are two types of arthritis. One is you are getting too young again in the wrong places, and one you're getting too old. And in rheumatoid, it's a problem of, let me think about this, I'm going to have to put it on the show notes. It's either over acidity or over alkalinity, and I'm spacing out on it right now. But it's simply you're too catabolic or anabolic. That's why you have two types of arthritis. One is caused by being over acidic, and one is caused by being over alkaline, rheumatoid versus osteo.
So from this email that we read, what kind of suggestions could you give to Patricia to move from here to see how she could kind of ditch the RA?
Find out first of all, find out who's the matter with me, because that takes care of the conversion factor. People who get rid of one disease without getting to the who, they get another disease. You ever notice how macrobiotics would always heal people of cancer, then they would die of heart disease a month later, and they never mentioned that? So in other words, the patient was cured, but they died. The disease was cured, but the patient died. That happens so many times. The guy who worked on the boy who had fish scale disease, he stopped his hypnotic research because he realized he was converting people. He met a woman on the bridge, and she said, "Do you remember me? Do you remember my husband?" "Oh, yeah. You healed him of a skin rash he had all over his body." And he thought about it. He said, "Yeah, I do remember that guy." Well, now his personality has changed. He's terrible to me. So he realized then that he took the person's disease and made another disease where his wife was going to get the disease from him. So he decided to be a psychotherapist after that and stop healing the diseases, but find out who's the matter with the person instead of what's the matter.
So after
what's the matter converts.
Yeah. So after Patricia works on who's the matter, what else then could she do on the oxalate thing?
Then after that, of course, keep the oxalates low.
Just keep them
low. Again, Wikipedia will probably give a good list of those oxalate foods, or you can find them elsewhere. They have a good list. I always follow the rule of thumb that is out of New York City. If you're going to ride the subway, ask three people. I would get three different opinions, because sometimes people have fanciful ideas about what oxalates are in and aren't in.
Mm-hmm.
You can neutralize them by cooking, by certain techniques for them. Those are good. Pressure cooking gets rid of a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sprouting gets rid of a lot of them. Anyway, look up what foods have them, and then definitely minimize. Minimize is the key, because avoidance cures nothing, but minimization definitely is a good idea with oxalates and lectins.
And then Ray Pete, he's been on about once a month, he's a real big fan of, if you can soak all these things at least 24 hours, right? That gets rid of a lot of the lectins, right? The lectins?
That's what we do. Yeah, they get rid of, they can work on oxalates too. Another thing is dextrinization.
Yeah.
Dextrinization will get rid of nitrates, it will get rid of oxalates, and so it has a multiple fashion. When I asked Ray Pete about oxalates, about dextrinization, he misunderstood me. There is there's about 10 different types of dextrinization. I'm talking to the one where you simply put a beet in the oven at 200 degrees for about a half hour, and suddenly it's like a candy instead of the taste of the beet. That's a whole big difference, and I regret that he didn't understand my question.
So just 30 minutes for a 200, wow.
That's all it takes. In fact, as an experiment, take a beet and divide it into two little pieces of beet.
Mm-hmm.
Keep one out and keep it warm, maybe on the pot or something like that, or in a warmer, and then put the other one in low heat, exposed to the entire dry heat of an oven, and taste the difference. It's remarkable. Works with potatoes and everything else too, but beets are extraordinary in their difference.
What's the highest temperature in a dry oven you can dextrinize potatoes?
Well, when you cook them, so you can dextrinize them after the fact too, but I prefer to just put them on about 350 or so and
just let them cook.
And dextrinize them as they go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dextrinization occurs differently. Like, now, if you dextrinize rice, you're going to be eating rocks. they have a different chemical structure. So they basically respond to only about 15 or 20 minutes to dextranize them. Any longer than that, and you might as well be chewing pebbles, and they're almost indigestible. Different foods respond to dextranization in different ways. The root vegetables are among the best for response to them because they it makes them all more delicious, whether you take sweet potatoes or potatoes or the exotic ones like malanga and patatas blancas and all the goodies
patatas
out there.
Blancas. Could you put the carrots in the oven with the beets and dextranize those?
Yes, dextranized carrots are delicious. I think Ray Pete goes a little overboard with beta carotene being so dangerous, but he is right. People with cancer, diabetes, and several metabolic states, the beta carotene can't be digested, and it actually blocks the retinol, the animal form of vitamin A, being absorbed, and it can cause macular degeneration, cataracts, a bunch of conditions. And so you have to be careful with beta carotene, and especially do not take a supplement of that.
Yeah. So this kind of is right along the same lines, if I can find it here. It was about potatoes. Where is it? Okay. As Adam eats potatoes frequently, can you tell us if the process of converting their starches into dextrin also reduces the high oxalate content of the potatoes? Or if there's another technique that we can use to achieve this, does he think regular eating of high oxalate foods is as big a problem as recent health trends say it is? Boy, that really fits right in to what we're talking about. That's amazing, that email. Yeah. Okay, let's see. So when we dextranize, does that get rid of the oxalates too for also Patricia?
Yes, gets rid of a lot of things. And again, it reduces it. Oxalates convert into various things. One of the most efficient ways I've heard, I'm not sure if this is true, is a microwave, but I stay away from microwaves. I don't have anything to do with them. So I stick to dextranization, or what do they call the ones that they add extra heat? No, they have a blower behind it. They have a name for that type of oven. Convection oven. Mm-hmm. They work really well.
So
yes, you can get rid of oxalates are destroyed by heat, by pressure, by various methods. And again, people can go overboard on it because a little oxalates are good for you. I have no worry about the oxalates in my coffee or my cocoa, but I confine my coffee and my cocoa to morning, and I have my oxalates at the correct time. This allows the body to function on time. It's like if I want to go to LA from here, I don't go at 6 o'clock when everybody's off working. It's like a parking lot. I would wait till 1 o'clock in the afternoon after the lunch hour is over. I would go where I want to be at that time. Same with the body. It has flows that you can go against or go with. And of course, people can go against these flows. They can, if I want to go to town at 6 at the evening and stay in the freeway for an entire hour instead of 10 minutes, you know, I can do it. People do that with their bodies, but timing makes sense and gets rid of a lot of backup problems and storage problems and warehousing problems that you don't need.
If someone wanted to eat a little bit of aloe vera daily for preventing wrinkles and pro-youthing, rejuvenating the various tissues of the bodies, would it be better to do so in the evening or on an empty stomach, or does it matter?
Evening, that's the best time, and you could do it on an empty stomach or have it with the notorious drink of taking tequila,
yeah,
which is also the same family, and taking some pineapple juice and taking some aloe and putting it together to a tequila sunset, is what I call it, instead of a sunrise, you're taking the tequila sunset, and that works well. And a lot of times, if I have any tooth issue or a sore throat or anything like that, I just pop a piece of aloe in my mouth and go to sleep with it. Of course, we know that Vibrant Gal took a look at the plants that for the product you're selling, and she was quite impressed.
Yeah, it's a really nice product. Here's an email. My wife keeps getting kidney stones. What is best to take to keep from getting kidney stones?
Usually, first of all, it's important to find out how they're caused. They can even be caused by cranberry juice, as amazing as it seems, but that's a one in a million chance. The main reasons are over-acidity, over-alkalinity, and infection. Those are your three things. So you find out if you're getting a uric one, an oxalate one, or an infection one. That's important to do. If not, make sure you hydrate well, that your urine is always coming out clear, that it's not coming out stinky. And you can be dehydrated and get a kidney stone with one marathon run. So one watches that, and they're not going to have any problem. I think I even heard that beer drinkers, because it forces them to urinate more, have less kidney stones. But it's definitely a hydration problem. And from there, you have to find out if you're acid, alkaline, or what type of kidney stone you're creating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and how inflammation would they, how would this emailer figure out if it's an acid or an alkaline thing?
Yep, I think the uric acid is the most common, the oxalate's the second, and the infective one is the third. Then there's all kinds of other ones that I've written blogs on kidney stones before, and found to my amazement there were about 30 different kinds. But fortunately, most of the ones past the three limit are really rare and unusual. However, you always have to deal with the exception to the rule, so it's good to keep hydrated on a regular basis. I don't drink plain water, but it doesn't mean I don't drink coffee, which can prevent kidney stones. Anything that keeps your urine coming out. If you're only urinating a couple of times a day, you're automatically vulnerable. Of course, you can get the kidney stones out with cranberry juice and corn oil. I probably told you the story of my friend Jimmy Salvaggio and Faye Salvaggio, who had the ranch that I lived at when I first started being on your show. Mm-hmm. And one time a guy called in and said, I can't come and put your fence in today or on Saturday because I have to go get a kidney stone removed. And my friend Jimmy Salvaggio said, look, if I show you how to get rid of that kidney stone, will you come in and put my fence in Saturday? I said, of course I will. So he said, take corn oil and cranberry juice tonight, 4 ounces of each at 6 o'clock. And they came out. So he was putting in Jimmy's fence Saturday morning.
That's funny. That's great. That's good. Good job.
So they do come out, but yeah. Remember, the kidney stones are not round and smooth like gallstones. They're very much like the uric acid ones. Sometimes look like coffins. You know, they're jagged, and so they can hurt and come out. They can bleed, but you can't get them out. And corn oil and cranberry juice is a good method. Also, you can preset that up. In one case, I would use a supplement. In Europe, they take 500 milligrams of magnesium, 500 milligrams of B6, and you take it for a while, and it will apparently loosen up some kidney stones, and then you would do the cranberry juice thing after. Mm-hmm. That's what I used to recommend people do when they had kidney stones.
Well, it's amazing that some of these stones can come out in these ducts. They must be pretty flexible in there, because I didn't do it well. I keep saying I didn't do a lot, but I did. You know, I was doing the castor oil packs and the other stuff, so that probably aided to the idea that this few of these big guys could get out of there, but pretty impressed, you know.
Yep. Our diet makes us inflexible. Omega-3s tend to fibrose us, but also a lot of other things like serotonin, nitric oxide, estrogen, all of those things fibrose us, and infection brings it about. So people who have very flexible flesh like a child and bones that have carbon dioxide in them instead of phosphates, they have much more flexible bones. But now they treat adult bones like you want more phosphate in, which makes them more breakable. And actually what you want is a young person's bone, so you want more carbon dioxide. Automatically, by increasing your levels of carbon dioxide at night, you reduce your amount of inflammation, and that's why I wouldn't be doing Wim Hof breathing at night. I'd have no problem with doing it at day, like, you know, the breath of fire and Kundalini yoga, all those things. Excellent techniques.
Sure.
I've done my share of that type of breathing, believe me. In fact, Sufi breathing, we used to God, we used to do it for a half hour at a time. And we used to shout while we did it, too.
Sure.
We heard a slightly different version of, instead of Hugh, we had who, 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 who. Imagine doing that at the top of your lungs for a half hour.
Nothing. Well, you know, that's
boy, it would get to your head.
That's the real opposite, isn't it? The Breath of Fire and the Buteyko, or the Wim Hof and the Buteyko. Those are two sides of the pole. They're both beneficial in their own way.
They both are beneficial in their own way, yeah.
Uh-huh. And anything can cure anything.
There we go.
Or anything can cause anything.
Cause anything and cure anything. So you got to keep open for that, because sometimes...
Yeah, you don't know.
You know, Emmanuel Ribisi actually used omega-3 oils. They can slow down the growth of certain amounts of cancer. He just knew, before I ever knew about Ray Pete, I knew that if you took omega-3 oils or cod liver oil for more than 6 weeks, you would develop an adrenal response, which is very dangerous to your body. So even before I met Ray Pete back in the 90s, I was restricting any cod liver oil or fish I ate to a certain amount of time, usually 3 weeks.
Well, my friend, well, it's time to go do something else. I mean, we did this for 2.5 hours, right?
You bet.
Yeah, well, it was fun. Thanks for being here. What are you guys going to do today? Anything fun?
Probably take the trash out and do some errands. I write a blog, and we got some work. I wish it would be sunny so we could go out and sun ourselves, but we are now living in Seattle for all intents and purposes. So, Al Gore, I think you better get your story straight.
Oh,
by the way, I should send you a video of one of the greatest anti-global warming guys was the starter of the Weather Channel. The new guy, he's going along with the whole thing. But he was a weatherman in San Diego that I used to love this guy because he was the most dramatic weatherman ever. But he has the best proof against global warming that anybody has, I think.
Is he still around, this fellow? Does he still live?
No, he went on cosmic vacation, sadly, a few years ago. But he was a wonderful guy. I'll send you the video. You can, post it or not. But at least I would recommend seeing it because he's a great guy. He was a great guy.
Yeah, what was his?
And he really gave him what for.
yeah. I remember. Yeah, he was a trip. He's a trip.
Yeah, and look at Al Gore. When his the guy who taught him about global warming said he was wrong, and what was Al Gore's response? Oh, he's gone senile.
Is that what they said? Must be senile. This guy just go. I can picture that fellow. Yeah, it's just Well, there's a lot of weird things going on with the man-made global warming. I'll tell you what. Al's in Australia right now, right? Talking. You told me, and it was the coldest day of the year ever in Australia.
That's what Vibrant Gal was on the internet yesterday and saw that story.
That's funny. In Australia, talking about climate change. Oh, it's the coldest day of the year.
Yeah, that's why they call it climate change now, because it's really embarrassing. Now, I've heard all these reports about the glaciers melting and all. One of the things, though, they say the sea is rising. I've lived here in Carpinteria on and off in this area, Montecito, since 1970s, early 1970s. And I've gone to the beach here and haven't seen that water come up an inch. They're actually planning in Santa Barbara. In 20 years, it's going to be up here, and they're going to have to destroy this part of the city and make it into a park because it's underwater.
It's ridiculous. What
the heck? How can it be doing it in 20 years now when it hasn't done it in the 50 or more years I've been in this area? So it makes no sense at all.
They got some of those presidential candidates on the socialist side saying, well, if we don't, Earth is going to be destroyed in 12 years. I mean, just crazy stuff, you know. These people have no idea. They're just making up, you know.
Yep. I'd more likely look for a meteor coming out from outer space. We are in danger there. I think we should prepare ourselves. But I think global warming is going to take quite a lot. and global cooling, I think we're probably due for another ice age here down the line and another 1,000 years or something.
Yeah, we've talked to several people who say that the Earth is actually cooling. So who knows, man? It's just... You just can't believe stuff out there. Just don't pay attention, man. Just don't pay attention to any of it. Just do your work. Do your job. Love your family. Take care of your kids. And hug your cows. We'll leave you with that. All right, my friend, thanks a lot. Vibrant Gal, we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Okay. She says thank you. Right.
Okay. Thanks, Adam.
Namaste.
Namaste, and may the blessings be. Okay, we're going to have fun tomorrow. We'll talk about the brain. We're going to talk about, what else are we going to talk about? The brain, what else? Brain. Oh, yeah. Got to get to the schedule here. Oh, yeah, Sam Milhelm and EMFs, 5G, but some cool stuff. How to protect yourself, grounding. If you want to if you're using grounding technology, you might want to listen to Sam Milhelm and get his opinions on that. A lot of viewpoints on things, so don't go crazy. It'll be fine. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. We'll see you on tomorrow at 9 o'clock Central Time. Don't forget we have over 2,500, probably more than closer to 3,000 shows. We need to change that banner. Free, absolutely no cost to you. No cost to you. Just go into our search function, put in a name, put in a particular challenge or a disease or a book, name of a book. You'd be surprised all the people, like the lady that talked about Wim Hof. Yeah, we've interviewed Wim. Just put his name in there and boop, you'll find the interview. Just, you see people on YouTube that, boy, I'd like to hear Patrick talk to him. Well, I get emails all the time. You should talk to him. And I'll say, oh, we already have. So check our search engine. You find a lot of stuff that you'll enjoy. Also, we do a few little things on Facebook. Patrick Timpone, if you want to join us there. I don't spend a lot of time there, but we play around a little bit. I love you all very much. And take care. May the blessings be.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.